This is Marshall Masters for Yowza.com. That's YOWUSA.com. And today we're going to cut to the chase with John DiNardo.
Suddenly I opened my eyes and I saw through the world's disguise. And is it a curse to know the difference between the lies and the truth?
This is our first show on Cut to the Chase for 2012, and I thought the best place to start is with Edgar Cayce. It's because, while his prediction for the year 2000 did not happen, that's not to hold it against him. You know, forecasting and predicting into the future it's an imprecise process. You know, think of looking at time through a garden hose. Or better yet, when was the last time you had a weatherman that had a 100% accuracy rate on his predictions, and with all the radar and gadgets that they have? So the point here is that you say, all right, what are the harbinger signs? Do not get date fixated. What's the prophecy? Edgar Cayce's pole shift prediction is on track, and this according to fellow 2012 researcher John DiNardo. You've heard him on the show many times before, and he's really done an exquisite amount of work on Edgar Cayce's prophecy, and I felt this was the best place to start 2012. And with that, let's get into it with John.
Get a job, pay your taxes, pay your dues. You can live any way that you want to as long as you don't break any of their rules.
This is Marshall, and I'm on with John DiNardo. John, welcome back to Cut to the Chase.
Thank you, Marshall. I'm glad to be with you and your audience.
Well, I'm glad to have you here because, well, here we are, and this is 2012. And I am seeing troubling signs. I'm seeing things that really do bother me a bit in terms of seismicity, the magnetosphere, earth wailing sounds. Something that to me is like early signs of something big coming. And as the author of Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift, the whole book really is talking about an Edgar Cayce pole shift and focusing on these times. And of all of the researchers I kibitz with, you seem to have a much, much broader take on Cayce than I see elsewhere, even with people who are involved with the ARE. I mean, they, for years, really took a heavy beating with Edgar Cayce's pole shift prediction that it would happen around 2000. So when it didn't, they just got pummeled, and now they just don't want to talk about that. It's a verboten topic there. But you're following it, and I'm seeing these videos on YouTube with the crying earth signs, and I want to make sure we're not getting bamboozled here, that we're not having a lot of hoaxers doing something like this, that these are genuine, and that takes time to observe, but it's still very noteworthy, particularly the noise it makes. But I'm seeing this quake activity in the South Atlantic that's above Antarctica, and this is where a magnetic pole flip is going to start. That's where you get the reversal zones. But we also had a 9.5 pop-off in Siberia on December 27th. It was in the lull between Christmas and New Year's, and so it just got a quick mention in the news. But the last 9.5 was in Chile in 1960, and that was one devastating earthquake. Caused a huge tsunami as well. And here it's just mentioned in passing. Well, Chile, 1960, and Siberia, 2011. These two quakes at 9.5 take first place for the largest events recorded in the last 100 years. So the fact that it got a soft pedal, that really blows me away. Birds are dying around the first of the year. And CNN, after reporting everything in the story, says it was firecrackers. I'm going, oh man, that is such a lame throwaway, because, you know, you have one species that's be affected in different areas around the same time. if it were firecrackers, well, excuse me, firecrackers have been around for a whole long time. I mean, this would be something that would be documented year in and year out that the firecrackers are killing the birds. And probably there would be legislation on the firecrackers and so forth. No, so all of this is, you know, nothing to see here. Move on. But I see it. I also see the huge fish kills. There was a huge fish kill around that time. A lot of herring, just tons and tons of herring showing up. But we have two subsea volcanoes, Canary Islands and Red Sea, that are, so we have rising seabeds there. We have the earth cries. We have this new seismicity, these swarms of fives and sixes in the South Atlantic. And
incidentally, Marshall, that the USGS showed us their desire to cover up these ominous earthquakes by taking down the reports. One report of the 6.7, that was the largest of three earthquakes that occurred a few days ago, mm-hmm. as you said, right near Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
They took down one of them. So as you had mentioned in the past, it is not the crime that incriminates them, but it's the cover-up of the crime that incriminates them.
Boy, they are doing the cover-up, aren't they? I mean, but hey, you and I, we've seen this for years and years and years and years and years. So it's business as usual. But I just was really surprised, though, at how nonchalant the public is, that there's a 9.5 earthquake in Siberia, and because there's no body count, it's like everybody's focused on Republican debates, and it's like, hold on a second. I mean, here's something that we should be talking about this and having a serious conversation.
Well, even the what further incriminates them is that they have lied about that 9.5 magnitude earthquake that you just referred to in Siberia.
Really?
Because they changed the Richter scale. You see, the 9.5 magnitude earthquake in Chile in 1960 was using the old Richter scale. And since then, in the few decades ago, they have changed the Richter scale so that an earthquake appears by their reports to be much smaller than it actually is. It's like taking a man who's 6 feet tall and saying that he's 5 feet tall. That's what the USGS has been doing. And it's their incrimination.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, because it was a 9.5 in Chile in 1960 with the old standard. So if we were applying that old standard, which measured Chile, what would have been the Siberia quake?
10.5.
Oh, my God.
It would have been so bold as to alter that great an earthquake by one full point. One full point, as you know, would represent 10 times greater magnitude
right.
than it actually is. Now, they wouldn't be so bold as to call it a 9.0 if it was a 9.5, if it was actually a 10.5.
Mm-hmm.
Because a 10.5 would basically shatter the world, I think.
Yeah.
So let's say that maybe it was a 9, was actually on the old Richter scale. It might have been 9.8 or 9.9 or 10.0.
So in other words,
but that's huge.
That's huge. In other words,
that
is not only earth-shattering, it makes it the largest recorded earthquake ever.
And imagine if they had said this is the largest earthquake that has ever occurred in the recorded history of the world, that would have thrown the world into panic, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
so
that would have been a wake-up
call.
Yeah, so in other words, in order to prevent a wake-up call, they give us the BAFO. Well, business as usual, and folks, that's the name of the game, you know. They just don't want anybody to know what's happening until the day they are dying. I mean, Emmerich, when you watch the 2012 movie, I mean, golly gee. When I was reading this scenario, it kind of corroborates what we're talking about with Edgar Cayce. Greg Jenner mentioned it in his Jenner Files, which is on yowza.com. I'll put a link up there for folks. But there was one fellow who, I think in 1936, had a vision. I mean, he saw California going off into the sea. And when you read that, you just literally see the whole scenario for Emmerich's 2012 movie kind of coming to pass. It looks like that's where Emmerich got his inspiration for 2012. So let's take a look at that briefly, because I think it does correlate with what Edgar Casey is prophesizing. And I want to get you to read Edgar Casey Prophecy, particularly when we get into the second segment. But right now, for the listener, so that they can keep pace with us, let's look at a little bit of cooperation between this other thing, because I think there's, frankly, something that folks who are living in Los Angeles can do today to be a part of vetting prophecy. So talk about that guy.
Joe Brandt.
Yeah.
Joe Brandt was a young 17-year-old man, teenager. In 1937, he fell off his horse, hit his head, and wound up in a Fresno, California hospital. And during several days or more in that hospital, he went in and out of consciousness numerous times. And during this time, he wrote down the visions, the bizarre visions that came to his mind. These visions were evidently from a supernatural power,
right?
As experienced by many others that can be documented also.
Yeah.
But he wrote these things, these visions down of his experience. He was looking into the future and seeing the environment in the neighborhood of Hollywood and Vine streets in Hollywood, California.
Mm-hmm.
And the details that he described indicate that this occurred. A vision is looking far into the future. And it appears he may have seen in 1937 what is about to happen in the very near future in Los Angeles, the great earthquake. Joe Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T.
Yeah, and I'll have that in the link there for the Jenner files. And so, I mean, this is important because it's a very lengthy prediction, which makes it somewhat unusual. Most of them are much smaller, but this account is very well documented and goes several pages. And, you know, we're not going to have the time to get into that, but there are certain harbinger signs that people could key in on to see if that's really happening. So for those of you who live in the Los Angeles area, heads up, this is something you can do to personally vet. Or if you're going to be visiting Los Angeles and you're on a tour bus, you could do the same thing. And that makes it a little exciting. So let's talk about when this event was happening. I know he said that the birds all disappeared, which is, you know, that's consistent with what we know about seismic activity, that the animals are going to bug out. Okay, that's it. They know it's coming before we do. And that's the reason why dogs and cats will disappear before a quake event. Birds will fly away. They're feeling these earth forces. And he talks about the birds are all gone. But it was the human aspects in that were particularly interesting to me, particularly with the way people are dressing and what he saw with the billboard. Give us those details.
Joe Brandt's 1937 vision of the future Hollywood Boulevard described a young man in their late teens or early 20s wearing beards and earrings. Beards and earrings. Now, in 1937, that was totally unheard of. It was unimaginable.
Right.
Men would have facial hair and earrings. He also described young girls in their late teens or early 20s with short dresses, very short dresses. That was unheard of in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he described small cars. Well, the cars today are very small compared to the way the size of cars decades ago. If you've ever seen a 1952 Buick or Cadillac, you'll know what I mean.
Yeah. Hey, baby. Cheap steel, cheap gas, big flowing designs. Yep, yep. I mean, you can scrap those and get enough metal to build three Volkswagens.
So by Joe Brandt's 1937 vision, image of the cars that existed in the 30s, the cars that he saw in the future on Hollywood Boulevard were indeed very small.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they are by that comparison. He said it seemed like Halloween the way people were dressed. Well, I guess it would if people in the past looked at the way we dress today.
Yeah.
They would sure think it's Halloween. But he said it's more like, it can't be Halloween because it seems more like springtime. And I guess he saw new buds on the trees and, you know, and leaves starting emanating from the trees.
So we're talking in the March, April, May timeframe.
He indicated that it seemed like springtime, even though it looked like Halloween. But again, the Halloween might just be the bizarre appearance to him of the futuristic clothes that he saw in his vision.
Yeah, but stop to think about it. We go to a Halloween party. What do? We dress like people back in the 1930s and in other times, you know. So when we look at what they were wearing, we treat it as costumes. So he would see that. That'd be consistent.
And he saw a billboard, a marquee, and this is something that people in California, in the Los Angeles or Southern California area can check out.
That's right. Listen up to this, folks. Listen up to this. Go.
And incidentally, you can get all the details. I'm going by memory, but the details, his detailed vision is written down on the internet, and Marshall's going to have it on his website with every single word of Joe Brandt's prophecy.
Right.
So you can look it up yourself. But as I recall, he said there was a marquee with like cardboard cutouts or big cutouts of two women with two blondes with white dresses and long legs. Now there may, that marquee may be up there right now, and or it might be up there in this coming spring, because remember, now we're in the year 2012 and we're approaching spring.
Okay, we're looking for two women, white dresses, long legs,
blonde.
Both women's are blondes.
Correct me, though.
Do you recall them being like tallish, or?
I think he just said long legs, but okay. When you read it, you'll be able to correct any errors that my memory may be generating, because you'll be able to read the exact and read it carefully. You'll see all the details that I may be overlooking or forgetting. But in addition to this marquee, it might be Grauman's Theater. It might be one of the theaters there.
No, it was Grauman's Theater he was talking about. I remember that. I believe he was talking about Grauman's Chinese Theater.
I'm not sure if he mentioned it or not. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But he did say there was a big clock.
Right.
A big clock. And it read, even, you know, getting down to the details, 10 minutes till 4, I think. Again, check it out. But there's other details. Let's see now. When things started getting scary, people started becoming concerned. Maybe there were vibrations or booming sounds or something.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, there was a woman, an elderly woman, with her walking her little dog, a little white dog, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And she got scared and picked up her dog and said, "Come on, let's go home, Frau Frau." So she even had, there was a woman with a dog, and she may be walking that dog every day. This coming spring, who knows? So look for a woman with a little white dog and find out if the dog's name is Frau Frau.
Yeah.
Also, he mentioned that the young girls had, this is an interesting point, the young girls had frowsy hair. I think that's F-R-O-W-S-Y. I'm not sure of the spelling. But when you look up the word frowsy, you can find the correct spelling. Look it up in the dictionary. It's defined as disheveled. Now, if you look at the punk hairdos today of the young girls, a lot of them have the hair sticking out in all different directions.
Yeah.
Or even the fluffed out afro look might be coming into vogue. I'm not sure, but certainly you can check out on the internet new hairstyles, young hairstyles. There are many different ones, especially the ones that are popular and will be popular in Southern California this year. Check that out. See if there indeed are any frowsy hairstyles for the younger set.
All right.
So anyway, this is an important thing to look into. This could tell us the imminence of the Great California Earthquake. When it did occur, he mentioned all of a sudden people started getting scared and they were going to a panic. He looked at the cars and some of the cars started sliding sideways toward the curb, from the roadway. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, without getting into too much detail, by looking, reading Joe Brandt's prophecy and determining if all his prophetic visions are occurring right now, especially that marquee with the two blondes and the long, with long legs, if that's occurring now, then we may be able to warn many people of this coming earthquake.
I agree. And I think what I found interesting with Joe Brandt, because there's one thing in there he says in his prophecy, is that there's a last radio broadcast, and they're saying to the rest of the nation, this is California, and we're going into the sea. And of course, you look at 2012 with Emmerich, and it's California going into the sea. With that in mind, I think now we've really set up that there is this convergence of prophecy. We have a lot of these other signs that are happening. And that the reason why people, frankly, are not seeing it clearly is that they're being duped and misled. And so I, for one, am never going to use the term sheeple, because I see how people are being misled. And it's the most evil thing imaginable. But with that, let's get into the second segment with Edgar Cayce. And let's take a look at what he was writing. You have a whole lot of selected portions of his writings and things that you focused in on, and I believe you bring a much better context to it than the ARE researchers, because they're really just being suppressed. They're saying, you know, the speakers that don't talk about it, they don't want to get into it. But that's because of their own history. You're just a secular guy, researcher like myself. You're agnostic to all of these economic and political issues. You just want the good stuff. When we come back in the next segment, let's get into that good stuff.
Okay.
For those of you that want to read the Joe Brandt prophecy, you can find that on yowza.com, YOWUSA.com. You can read it for free. Just go to the Planet X section of the site, or just search on the Jenner files. That's J-E-N-N-E-R. And you'll be wanting to look for Part 4, Destroyer. There's two versions. There's a free version, and you can watch it through a flip file. For those of you who would actually like to download the original source documents and images, that comes with a yowza.com subscription, along with access to all of our shows dating back to 2004. So take a moment and see what we have for subscription plans. If one of those works out for you, please help get the ball down the field. We've got a lot of folks out there to bring into awareness. And now, let's get a little deeper into Edgar Cayce's prophecy on the pole shift with John DiNardo. We'll move on to the interview in just a moment, but first I want to talk about two words that you really need to know and understand. One is perception, and the other is awareness. These two words describe essentially the same thing, but from very different points of view. Perceptive is a material view of what is coming in the days ahead and how to survive it. Awareness is a spiritual term for what is coming in the days ahead and how to survive it as well. The difference is between service to self and service to others. Perception is the benchmark that the elites use. The dog-eat-dog logic is, if you are as smart as them, that you can perceive what is going to happen in the future, then maybe you earn a right to do something about it. Build your own bunker. Not necessarily that they're going to give you a Golden Wonka ticket to their own bunkers. But rather, it's the mechanism that they use to justify the way that they are suppressing this vital knowledge
for the majority of humanity. Because the simple point of it is that once oil infrastructure is destroyed on the planet through various different natural disasters, it doesn't matter how much oil we can pump out of the ground. If you cannot move it and refine it and dispense it, it's just nothing but useless black goo. Which means the petrochemical-based fertilizers and insecticides that have created the ability for us to produce 2 to 3 times as much food as we normally would through purely organic means is going away. At that point, we're going to have a lot of hungry people chasing after a few scraps and morsels. And so while the elites are down in their bunkers knowing that people are starving to death and doing horrible things because of it above ground, they'll be confident in their righteous decision to say, if you're not smart enough to perceive it, that's what you deserve. But if you are like myself, a light worker or a life worker, and you are in a service to others mode, the term is not perception. It is awareness. And awareness comes to each and every one of us in its own way and its own time. And when you are in service to others, you help those who do come into awareness and seek your knowledge. And when that day comes, you're going to be busy with your own survival, and you'll help them as best as you can. But a real head start is to be able to say, here, read Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide, or Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift. These two books are going to help you bring others into awareness because you can cover a lot more ground with a lot more people, more effectively, and very quickly with these tools. It's a principal reason why I wrote the books. And with that, let's move on to our interview.
John, as a prelude to the Edgar Cayce reading, I want to play a little bit of this audio I've downloaded off of YouTube from one of these Earth Cries events. And let's listen to this together and then just talk about that for a moment as a setup to the reading of passages that you have on Edgar Cayce that are directly related to this time. When you listen to that sound, you can hear a lot of different things going on. You know what it reminds me of in a way? I mean, the sound is not necessarily the same, but you know, those old movies about submarines from World War II and the torpedo runs, you hear the torpedo in the water because they have the sonar guy, and then boom, the ship goes down and you hear the bulkheads twisting as the ship is going down. And I don't know, the sound of it just makes me feel like bulkheads are collapsing.
Is it a long, sort of a long, screechy, groaning sound?
Yeah, you know, it's just, it just goes on and on. I mean, it doesn't have the sharp punctuations, but it just reminds me of these old World War II movies where the bulkhead's collapsing. The sound of it is of a vessel, a structure, is sinking and it's failing. It's losing its form and shape.
Well, we could follow these sounds, and in order to verify that they are naturally occurring, something occurring from natural sources, not from man. And in a period of time, I think we'll be able to determine that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to take, we got to be careful before we jump on the bandwagon with that. But still the same, if it's disinformation and it's being planted, then it's being planted to create a false impression. You know, it's just the same way they did with crop circles. All you have is a few guys out there hoaxing a couple of formations, which are easy to spot for the researchers. But it just takes a couple bad apples, if you will, to destroy the whole barrel in terms of credibility from the public view. You know, and
right,
I think it's
will...
the same thing here. It could be that this is either genuine or this is a disinfo ploy to distract us or to kill interest in something we should be concerned about in the first place.
Right. So we will carefully study these bizarre sounds to determine their origin.
Right.
But I will say that we should, when we do study them, we should keep in mind that during the ancient historical description of the last catastrophic earth disasters of roughly 1630 BC,
mm-hmm.
by the Egyptian, in the Copernican Bible, there mm-hmm. were Egyptian survivors who described the events, and they mentioned shrilling, a trumpeting sound, like elephants. They may not have said elephants, but they did say a trumpeting sound was occurring
mm.
as the Israelites fled from their Egyptian masters.
Mm-hmm.
And Israelites were being pursued by the Egyptian army
mm-hmm.
as they fled to the Red Sea. And there was shrilling, and also there was what we would today describe as a jello-like shimmering of the mountains and the hills.
Mm.
This is what the Egyptians saw. But
okay.
it's the shrilling sound that we want to keep in mind and then try to understand the mechanism of the earth that would have caused this shrilling sound, because we know there was no man-made source of shrilling
no.
that would have occurred during those ancient times of
That's
ancient
right.
Egypt.
That's right.
So keep that in mind. And
all right, well, we'll watch that, but let's get into Casey, because
you got
some good stuff to read on Casey. So, I mean, let's just jump to that.
Just a quick background, since this report has not given us a background, I'm going to make this very brief.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar Casey lived during the first half of the 1900s. He began to fall into a trance. He found that hypnosis was able to cure people. He cured his wife of a life-threatening disease using hypnosis, and he began to help other people because he was a man who felt driven by a powerful force, a force of goodness. The
yes.
force of God to help other people. So this became his life's pursuit, to go into a trance, and knowing that he had healed, he had determined the cause and cure of his wife's illness, he was going to apply this healing technique to others.
Mm-hmm.
There's many cases that are documented, well documented, in a huge library at the Association for Research in Enlightenment in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Over 14,000 readings where he was in a trance and he cured people. Now, very briefly, I got to prove to you, I've got to take a little bit of time and make it quick to prove to you that this man was authentic. There was one case where a woman had a sore on her leg. It was festering flesh on her leg, and they were about to amputate her leg. Now, this woman lived far away from Edgar Casey. The story is well documented. He went into a trance. They told his wife and secretary, wrote down everything he said while he was in a sleep trance. They presented him with the problem. This woman has a sore on her leg that's festering. It's going to be amputated. And he would go in trance. He would say, "We are going down State Street." Now, remember, he had never been in this town or city
mm-hmm.
before, far away, hundreds of miles away.
Mm-hmm.
"We're going down State Street. We are now going into the house. It's a greenhouse. On the first floor, there is something as a pot of stew cooking on the stove.
Mm-hmm.
We go upstairs. Now we have found the body. The woman is laying down upstairs in bed.
Mm-hmm.
We are going through the heart, through the lungs, through the arterial system. Ah, yes, we have found the wound. Her leg, it's on her leg." And they said, yes, his wife said, "Yes, Laura has a sore on her leg." And Casey, in a trance, says, "She has been bitten by a tiny brown spider. Oil of smoke will heal her leg, save her leg. Bancroft Pharmacy, top shelf, oil of smoke." So they called Chicago, Illinois. They called Bancroft Pharmacy in Chicago, Illinois. The pharmacist says, "No, we don't have that medicine anymore. I'm looking on the shelf. It's all gone. It's a company that went bankrupt a few years back."
Mm-hmm.
And they told Casey in the second trance that the oil of smoke was not there. Casey replied, "Yes, it is. It's behind the blue bottle." They called back to Bancroft Pharmacy in Chicago, and the pharmacist looked and said, "Oh, yeah. It was hidden behind this blue bottle. We'll send it out to you right away."
Wow.
Well, and a second proof, and this, I'll make this brief, he allowed skeptics, people who tried to discredit him, skeptical physicians, medical men to come in and poke him with a needle while he was in a trance to see if he would budge. They were trying to prove this man a fraud. Mm-hmm. What they did was they went farther than they had promised. They actually took a scalpel and cut off his fingernail. Very painful. Well, Casey did not budge at all in a trance, but when he woke up, he was in excruciating pain and vowed that he would never allow anyone to test him again. Okay, that gives a background on Edgar Casey's authenticity and his ability to do things that were psychically miraculous. Evidently, some supernatural power was giving him this ability to heal others. Mm-hmm. And others like Nostradamus were also healers. But let me go on and tell you some of the things he said, some of the non-healing prophecies that Edgar Casey brought up. Yeah. I'm looking at the book, Edgar Casey on Atlantis, by his son, Edgar Evans Casey, and his other son, Hugh Lynn Casey. These are readings and commentaries on various Casey's trance readings. Atlantis, according to archaeologists, went under the seas, sank beneath the seas around 9,000 BC. That would have been three, if you do the arithmetic, that's about three Planet X orbits ago. Mm-hmm. So Planet X was evidently the culprit, the wrecking ball that caused this destruction of the entire Earth. Now, what they're saying here in the Casey book, his son is saying that there were Casey is mentioning, they're saying their father mentioned that there was a second destruction, the first destruction of Earth, and a second destruction of Earth occurring around the same period that really put an end to Atlantis, sort of like a 1-2 punch.
Mm-hmm.
And what they say here, quote, is these events that Casey is referring to are, quote, fixed by a reference to a certain being. Before the second destruction or before the upheavals that separated the large landmass into islands. So what they're saying, there was one landmass, according to Casey's hypnotic statements, that encompassed all comprised the entire Earth itself, one landmass. And this is when all the continents got broken up at the sinking of Atlantis around 9,000 BC, so that the continents broke loose and formed to what we know exists today.
So he has a different time frame for Pangaea. Okay.
Yeah. Now, quoting Casey in a trance. Now, I'm going to speak slowly so you understand that I'm quoting Casey while he was in a trance. Okay. Now, these are extremely convoluted comments, so Marshall and I are going to attempt to clarify them. In Atlantis before the second upheavals, a priestess in the temple through which mystics studied those tenets of the application of spiritual laws to material things. Now, that was Casey in March of 1944 in a trance. And he's giving us a phrase, not even a fragmented sentence, actually. He's stating that a priestess existed in a temple, and there were mystics there, people who were spiritually minded, and they were interested in spiritual laws and applying them to their everyday life. Well, you might compare that to people today applying belief in God to their everyday life, religious people who want to follow God in this modern day and age. Okay, now Casey goes on in another reading, which was in 1938, in a trance. He says, in Atlantean land, prior to the second upheavals, one sympathetic to lowly workers. Now, I've read this, so I'm able to interpret a lot of this. I've studied this before.
Mm-hmm.
What he's saying is giving us a fragmented statement in June of 1938, while in a trance, he's simply stating in this fragmented sentence that there was a priestess, one who was sympathetic to the slaves. You see, there were two castes, according to Casey's readings.
Mm-hmm.
There was one, the upper ruling class, who dominated and exploited the lower working class of slaves.
1%, 99%. All right.
And we have that today.
Right.
Now, going on to another reading, this is Edgar Casey, January 1944, in a trance. In Atlantean land prior to second upheavals. Oh, I read this. In Atlantis before second breaking up of the land.
Mm-hmm.
So he mentions that twice. There was two breaking ups, at least. Before the second breaking up, they used divine force for gratifying selfish appetites. So evidently these people were somehow using supernatural powers, divine force that would be from God, but they were satisfying selfish appetites with it. So they were misusing the force, divine force, and I presume that's God and not the devil.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to consider. Now, are there people today, because there are parallels to what Casey is supernaturally describing from 9000 BC, parallels between that empire that existed of Atlantis and the empire of the United States today. Are people using supernatural or divine powers to satisfy, gratify their selfish appetites?
Yes.
I think so.
Yeah, it's called remote viewing. The government, CIA, KGB, doing it during the Cold War, and I feature that extensively in my last video, which is Beat the Elites, about the Occupy Wall Street movement. So, yeah, they're using these powers, but they're not using them for the intended purpose.
Human nature hasn't changed in 11,000 years, has it?
Not that much. I think we have improved in other realms, but...
Not in man's greed, though.
No, that seems to be a constant one. That's the one that my guides tell me we're not going to break this cycle where our civilizations rise quickly, slowly deteriorate over time as elites suck the vitality out of them, and then leave them so weakened that it doesn't take actually that big a catastrophe to bring down the empire, because everyone's going... There's nothing in it for me. It's kind of like Rome, you know? I mean, they're middle class. Just stepped aside and let the hordes come in because they were tired of being taxed and treated unfairly. So the middle class revolted on them. And that's what we have here. I mean, the middle class is really disaffected. So, yes, you have the elites. You have everybody else. The elites are in a bubble, completely out of touch, sucking the vitality out of the empire. So same thing was happening then in Atlantis at that time. So that meant that there was a tremendous amount of class friction.
Okay, now you have in November 1940, Edgar Casey in a trance stated, In Atlantean land, during the period of changing of individuals from double sex, or the abilities of progeneration of activities of self, wait a minute. Whoa.
Oh, man.
In Atlantean land, during the period of changing of individuals from double sex, or the abilities of progeneration of activities of self. I had to really think about that one, and I'm still not sure, but what occurs to me is, could this be cloning?
Yeah.
Cloning
in vitro. Sounds to me that he's talking about what they're doing today. I mean, sex change operations where we can change ourselves from men to women and vice versa.
But I mean, it goes further. Like, cloning would be creating a new individual, two people from the same genetic structure.
Mm-hmm.
Or they clone warriors, soldiers who have no conscience whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing today, cloning soldiers that are completely obedient and have no moral reservations, and they are enslaved to those who give them commands.
Yeah.
Now, the cloning would be double sex. And a clue to that is where he goes on to say, or the abilities of progeneration of activities of self. Progeneration is to create another person. Progeneration of the activities of yourself. So you're doubling yourself. Double sex, or it wouldn't really be double sex.
You're cloning yourself.
Double self.
So that's what he's talking about. He's talking about cloning yourself. So let's do this. Let's pick up with cloning when we go into the third segment, okay?
Okay.
Should I say what I'm thinking now? Should I speak what I'm hearing about? Should I...
For those of you who'd like to follow up on the book mentioned by John DiNardo in this interview, You can find a link here on the episode page. The book is called Edgar Cayce on Atlantis, and it is by Edgar Evans Cayce and Hugh Lynn Cayce. It's a very inexpensive book and an excellent addition to your library, so nail that link and get it. And now, let's get back to John DiNardo.
Oh, give me something to hold on to as a venture into the great beyond. And if you gotta say anything at all, let it be something true and beautiful.
We'll move on to the interview in just a moment. But first, I want to talk to you about a phrase that I hear time and time again from government whistleblowers who've been talking about 2012 and Planet X over these many years. They always say, you need to get your spiritual house in order. And while they understand it at an intellectual level, one thing I've noticed is that they're not able to go beyond that, because in order to get your spiritual house in order, it is not about your intellectual pursuit, it is your feelings. You have to be able to listen inside to that little voice. Well, what does that really mean? Does that mean you go to church and you sing some songs and you throw a few bucks in the basket? No. This is not to disparage religion. It gives people a lot of comfort. But the fact is, every modern religion in the world today has one thing in common. Not one has ever proven capable of surviving a global catastrophe. So then, what does getting your spiritual house in order really mean? Well, in a nutshell, what it means is, this is how the meek inherit the earth. And one could say that I spent a decade of research into this topic to really answer this one question. How do the meek inherit the earth? Well, in my book, Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift, I explain to you exactly how and why the meek inherit the earth, and how you can be a part of that. This knowledge is given to us by the ancient Egyptians in the Colburn Bible, the 21st century master edition, in which they describe an event they call the Great Winnowing. And what the ancient Egyptians warn us is that we're going to experience fear on a level we could not imagine at present. This fear will be so great that men will become impotent and women will become infertile. And I would ask you to just think about that for a moment. It takes a lot of fear to make us incapable of reproducing. And so they tell us that the stout-hearted will not go down to destruction. So getting your spiritual house in order means, how do you become stout-hearted so that you can survive a tribulation, which will pass, and after which we could have that millennium of peace prophesied for us? Well, I have invested a great deal of time and energy over the years in answering that very question. And if you read the accounts in the Colburn, they're like man-on-the-street interviews, and sometimes it's pretty unsettling. But in my book, Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift, I distill this down into a view that is not dependent on one particular faith or another. You could adapt it, but you will see the methodology of how you get your spiritual house in order for a global tribulation. And this, my friends, does take time, and the clock is ticking. So with that, let's move on to the interview.
John, in the last two segments, we've really been talking about harbinger signs that really describe us. And so we had one fellow who was talking about frazzled hair. Here he's talking about these other things that are happening. But it also reminds me of other prophecies from like Mother Shipton in the Colburn Bible. Now, women becoming the playthings of men. This is in the Colburn. Also, Mother Shipton talking about women dressing like men. All of these signs, these harbinger signs that we're getting from all of this convergence of prophecy, is describing us, who we are at this time, and it's a reflection of us. I mean, sure, they're looking at it from an ancient viewpoint, So they see a costume world, but when we look at them, we see a costume world. So it's costume for costume. I find that fascinating. So we've got the human harbinger events. But what I really want to start diving down into is what Casey's talking about, things that we can see now on an Earth scale, on the scientific side.
Okay. Casey's talking about here in February of 1935, one of Casey's readings in a trance saw what upheavals from destructive, I'm quoting him now, this person that he's, the ancient person from 9000 BC in Atlantis, is the one whom Casey seems to be looking through this person's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And Casey is saying this entity, this person whom he's looking through, mm-hmm. in 9000 BC, saw upheavals from destructive forces from the prisms, that's PRISMS, mm-hmm. prisms, activities that brought fires to the surface from nature's storehouse. End of quote.
Woo.
February 1935, Casey in a trance. Now, prisms were alleged to have been used as a weapon, high-tech energy weapon. Maybe you know something about that, Marshall.
Well, actually, there was one incident I recall historically where they used shields. They did copper shields or bronze shields, and they were actually able to direct it and to cause the ships of an invading army to catch fire, just no differently than we would set fire to kindling, you know, to get a campfire going. Reflecting sunlight, yeah. I mean, this has been used historically. There, you know, I'd have to go out and do it. But I remember seeing a show about it on television. So, yeah, the ancients would use light that way. They would bend it, and then that is prismatic, in a sense.
Well, this would be with crystals. Now, I think maybe they did use light, but it's some kind of a high electromagnetic energy that was somehow focused and amplified through crystal prisms. I know crystals mm-hmm. were a big major component or substance that was used for their weaponry back then in around 9000 BC, according to stories that we're hearing. Well, anyway, what they did with these prisms was they actually brought fires to the surface of the earth from nature's storehouse, and that would be the energy deep within the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we're seeing the same thing today. We see crazy experiments being conducted that may not be exactly that way, but we do see
BP oil spill.
Nuclear, the reactor, particle reactor in Switzerland.
Right.
They're trying to create a black hole. So there's a lot of devilish scientific activity going on today, just as there seems to have been in 9000 BC, Atlantis being a very close parallel to the imperialistic empire of the United States today.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that we have basically suspended posse comitatus and habeas corpus, it stuns me. We have this gridlock in Washington where nobody can agree on anything except on how to dismantle the Constitution. Obama signs it and says, gee, I'm never going to do it. It's like, yeah, well, you signed it anyway, schmuck. We're just seeing between the Patriot Act, this new defense bill, and then they're trying to run the internet into a Chinese-style internet with minders, and the government jumps in on it. The elites are just having a field day.
Now, the editors of this book, Edgar Casey's two sons,
mm-hmm.
Make a very poignant and important comparison. They draw mm-hmm. some conclusions here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to quote from what they're saying. The next few quotations from individual Edgar Casey readings, given years apart, these quotations confirm and amplify statements in other readings, such as, and he's now they're going to give us three main tenets or basic conclusions that they have gathered, these sons of Edgar Casey have gathered from his many readings. Conclusion number one. During this second period of destruction, there were two periods of destruction around 9000 BC,
mm-hmm.
like a 1-2 knockout punch of mm-hmm. planet Earth that occurred back then. The first conclusion that Edgar Cayce's sons state is one, during this second period of destruction, the Atlantean land mass, singular, Atlantean land mass was divided into islands.
Mm-hmm.
Conclusion number two, strife between groups characterized or even brought on this destruction. And we see that today. So there may be, it appears to be, a supernatural power of good and justice that is bringing punishment upon Earth, because they say strife between the groups characterized or even brought on this destruction. Well, it was not a destruction of man's weaponry caused by man's weaponry. It was destruction of the Earth caused by a natural disaster. So are we saying, are they saying here that this incoming brown dwarf star, which caused gravitational and electromagnetic molestation of Earth's entire surface, was caused by some power, some being? That's what they're saying. Conclusion number three, much of the discord centered around the attitudes toward the things or those of low estate. In other words, the slaves were beginning to rebel against being enslaved. And isn't that exactly what we saw during the time the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt? Moses brought the slaves into rebellion against Pharaoh.
But let's bring this forward to the current time. I mean, we're really buried here into this Atlantis story, but I'm looking for the parallels to the current time. So equate that to what we're seeing here. I mean, we're
talking slave rebellion.
Slave rebellion. So Arab Spring, Occupy Wall Street. Is this what you're talking about?
It's getting to the point where people know that they're being tyrannized and enslaved, and they're beginning to rebel. And there are forces that are saying, forces of good, people of good saying, God is touching them to try to bring people out of their slavery so they can get closer to God. And we see that that's what exactly what's being described in Edgar mm-hmm. Cayce's readings. There was a priestess and there were others who were trying to bring the people, the lower class slaves, closer to God, away from their enslavement and closer to God. And sure, I'm referring now to the Israelites' liberation from Egyptian bondage. But mm-hmm. again, we have to, that's a case number two, where we can see the parallel, where human beings were being enslaved and a great man of God, Moses, was raised up by God to liberate his people from slavery. Okay, so those are the three conclusions. One, there was a destruction. The landmass was broken into pieces. The earth was fragmented into continents. Two, there was it was the strife of man's evil causing this destruction that was brought about by a supernatural power.
Mm-hmm.
And much of it revolved around the slave rebellion. Okay, continuing on. Edgar Cayce, I'm just going to paraphrase his reading from February 1935 in a trance. He's saying, in Atlantean land, when turmoils and strife arose from rejections of tenets of the law of one, what he's saying is that strife arose because people were rejecting the laws of God, the law of one, mm-hmm. the law of the one God.
Mm-hmm.
And there was turmoils and there was egress. People were fleeing. Egress from that city of the Poseidon land when upheavals began. They started getting out of there. There were earthquakes. They had to flee in order to save their lives. Continuing is Cayce's reading from November 1933 in Atlantean land when rebellions, again, we have the slave rebellion, when rebellions brought about separation in the isles and upheavals in the lands, aided in bringing the beauties of life as well as necessities to people. So some of the spiritual things started to come out and flourish, evidently, from what he's saying. And that's what we see, spirituality flourishing today, too.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, he's going to go on to mention group praying, mass meditation, mass prayer, thousands of people praying together. He said that this is what happened in his trances. He said, this is what happened around 9,000 BC. People, there was a group consciousness, a universal consciousness praying to God.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go on. I'll get to that. It says, of upper classes, another quote from Edgar Cayce, May 1943, quote, of upper classes in Poseidon land, belittled self for better understanding between those that ruled and those that supplied necessities. Talking about the better understanding between the rulers and the slaves.
Okay. Okay. Obviously, we could go much deeper into this. And frankly, I just didn't have any idea how deep this was in terms of the parallels of Atlantean society and Western society today. I mean, the parallels here are really earth-shaking. But focusing on the word earth-shaking, because what we're really talking about is, well, what I talk about in my book, Edgar Cayce, his pole shift in crossing the cusp and how we survive it. Now, ARE was saying it was going to happen in 2000. Dating-wise, that's always a tough thing. I mean, it's setting dates with prediction is difficult because you don't know how free will can interface with things. And also the universe tends to go its own clock schedule as well. But I think Cayce is still right on a lot of things he was predicting. The equatorial bulge, NASA found the equatorial bulge, and other signs that he predicted are coming to pass. So for the listeners out there that are not necessarily up to speed on Edgar Cayce's predictions, let's cover the big ones. I mean, the guacamole hitting the fan predictions is a way to wrap up this interview and to encourage them to explore some of the resources we've been talking about. And by the way, that one book you've been quoting from, you can get a used copy of it on Amazon for a few bucks. Well worth the investment. So with that, take us to the point where the guacamole hits the fan. What's the big stuff that he says is going to happen?
Some of Edgar Cayce's most chilling Earth disaster prophecies are these. Quote, the greater portion of Japan must go into the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Los Angeles, San Francisco, both of these will be destroyed before New York. The Carolinas will be destroyed. When you see either the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in Italy or the eruption of Mount Pelée in the Lesser Antilles,
mm-hmm.
about 3 months thereafter will be the great major mega quakes in California and mm-hmm. the Western United States, all the way up to Nevada.
Wow.
And finally, there will be a shifting of the poles, such as what was the more tropical region will become the more frigid.
Right.
And vertical rotation of planet Earth.
Yeah, it's, and when you listen to it, I mean, his shifting, it's not what I've heard with other pole shift researchers, you know, the notion that the Earth flips head over heels or it stops and spins the other way, because with an event like that happening, I mean, it would reduce the planet to single cell animals. But on the other hand, if it's something where all you need to do is just shift the planet a few degrees on its axis, that does a lot of harm. It's a huge slosh. I mean, the oceans are just going to come up and hit the continents like hydraulic scouring pads and just rip everything off. So that's pretty consistent what you're talking about there.
Yes. So those several prophecies that I just mentioned
mm-hmm.
regarding destruction of various portions of the Earth and a vertical rotation of the Earth itself,
mm-hmm.
Consistent with many other prophecies from unrelated people around the world, transcending both time and geography. Going back to Nostradamus' predictions mm-hmm. by Nostradamus, who was also a healer, and that's not a coincidence that both the ancient Nostradamus and the modern day Edgar Cayce were both healers as well as prophets of future doom. But Nostradamus, also a healer, was predicted that the Earth will go into a shift of slow roll or a sudden jolt. In the 15, he said that around the early 1500s.
So we just see this drumbeat of prophecy that's happening, and it keeps marching in that direction, especially the part that really chills me is how they were able to predict our own sociological behaviors today as harbinger signs. And it cuts a wide swath when you look at, you know, Nostradamus, Mother Shipt, and Colburn Bible, Edgar Cayce, the young man we were talking about earlier in the show.
Joe Brandt.
I mean, these patterns just hook up and hook up and hook up.
And you know, you also have Gordon Michael Scallion, who was a couple decades ago was given prophetic visions. And he also saw the sea in visions and dreams. He was terrified to see that the oceans themselves buckled and land masses were thrust upward out of the ocean. And incidentally, Cayce predicted the same thing in some of his trances, that land masses would jut up, thrust upward from in the Atlantic Ocean.
That's happening.
And that confirms the Colburn Bible.
We already have upthrusts. We have subsea volcanoes that are rising up in the Canary Islands, in the Atlantic, but also in the Red Sea. In the last few minutes here, if someone is interested in following this, you know, and earlier we were talking about, well, next time you're in Hollywood, go to Grumman's Chinese Theater and look for a billboard with two tall blondes, long-legged. And if you find an old lady with a dog, what was the dog's name?
Frau Frau.
Frau Frau. You know, you got Frau Frau. You might not want to tell her exactly what it means, but just say hello and no, and there you go. If someone's going to follow up on this and do their own research, and that's really what I really want everyone to do, because it's part of growing yourself and coming to grips with this material. What would you say is the best way for them to start doing that?
Well, you mean in terms of looking for the coming signs of the Los Angeles earthquake?
Well,
or in terms of looking for any earth changes?
Any of the earth changes, this prophecy convergence, Edgar Cayce, but particularly if they want to study Edgar Cayce. You had Edgar Cayce on Atlantis, but what else?
Well, what they should do is study these prophets, these earth change prophets, and begin to learn more about what they saw and the spiritual state of mind that they had. Because everyone is capable, everyone has that capacity to get spiritual revelations from God if one feels close attachment to that invisible spirit, our creator. And even if not, some people were indeed chosen. They didn't seek to know from God, but they were chosen by God. However, everyone, I think, can get closer to God and corroborate for themselves that these prophecies are indeed true, and they will get messages. I myself get feelings and messages, attitudes, nothing that you can hear. It's nothing, you know, that would be remarkable, but it's a feeling and a sense of a thought that comes into one's mind regarding what's about to happen. And Marshall has gotten this spiritual guidance in his thoughts, as I have, even though we're both coming from different positions in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm finding with others, I'm finding what's interesting for me is I'm coming across authors who are secular Buddhists, and they're all of a sudden channeling Yeshua, Mary Magdalene, and it doesn't matter who they are. I mean, the same things are happening. They're contacted. And what they're told is, hello, you're writing a book. And they do. And their books are excellent. But this is happening on an even greater level. I see other people who are reporting these experiences, these channeling experiences with ascended masters and visions. You have to be careful, because a lot of it is Me Too-ism and or people just cooking it up just to think that they sound interesting. And then you have folks that are just hearing themselves. But I can vet the stuff that's authentic. And What I can tell you is in the last year, particularly in 2011, the upswell is exponential. It's huge. I'm seeing the connections, all these prophecies and everything are coming to pass. And so for the listeners, if you're saying on one hand, I should be reading how to buy generators and freeze-dried food, yeah, you should. But on the other hand, think about it. When you're sitting in the bunker, you're going stir crazy because you don't have something else to hold on to other than just waiting for someone to show up and try and steal what you have, or wondering if something else is going to fail that you haven't figured it out. But if you're studying what the ancient prophets and the predictions of Edgar Cayce are telling us and others, as you study that, you gain a new sense of perspective. And that new sense of perspective will probably be your single greatest attribute for surviving what comes. What do you think about that?
Oh, yes. I mean, feeling just making yourself consciously aware that there indeed is a spirit of God, a spirit you may call by any name you choose.
Mm-hmm.
But there is someone who keeps our heart beating and gives our mind a sense of conscience, a sense of righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
That spirit is with us all the time. And the noise and chatter of our modern-day hedonistic society drowns out that's what the Bible calls that still small voice of God.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sitting in your bunker or preparing for the disasters? The fear alone will motivate a person to listen for that guiding comfort of the powerful God who will protect us from disaster, the
That's
God
right.
who loves us.
That's
Just
right.
remember, love conquers all fear.
It does.
And the love of God with you will guide you through all of these horrors.
It really will. But the love of God is, in this particular case, is not what you're going to get in a Sunday sermon. You're going to have to find this on your own. You're going to have to be a spiritual thinker, which means you are willing to stand alone in your knowing, just as you are, John. And that's an important thing. So it's not to confuse whether you're Christian, Jewish, or whatever your faith is, or if you have no faith. All of that is a side issue. In this case, it really boils down to how you walk humbly with your God, one-on-one. And that's the skill. You've got to be able to cultivate that ability within yourself to not only hear that inner voice, but to trust it completely. And if you can do that, you've got a huge advantage of survival.
Yes, it's a practicing of that mental communion, that mental telepathy with God. You're listening for the spirit, even though there's no sound. You're trusting that the mind of God will speak to your mind and comfort you and guide you. And church is out. I do not go to church.
Yeah.
I commune with God in my mind directly.
That's the way to do it. And that's the way we're told to do it. So there it is, folks. You want to talk to God about this? Go sit under a tree. God made trees. God didn't make asphalt shingles. And again, John, this has been great. We've covered a lot of bases. Look forward to the next time.
Thank you so much, Marshall.
Well, folks, as always, John DiNardo delivers a great interview. And this one has really gone into an awful lot of depth about the coming pole shift. The signs are there, but I have to tell you something, folks. I've been doing this since 2002 on Planet X, and frankly, I haven't seen resistance to awareness higher than it is right now. The closer we are, the more people do not want to see. But is that you? Is that how you want to meet it? Do you want to say, gee, I was hoping against hope and I was deaf, dumb, and blind, and yes, I let a media controlled by elites dumb me down so I could do that? Or are you going to think for yourself? Do you have the guts to stand alone in your own knowing. Because, folks, the clock is ticking. And as the clock winds down, so do your options. And I'll leave it on that note. So until the next time we meet, remember Marshall's motto. Destiny comes to those who listen and fate finds the rest. So learn what you can learn, do what you can do, and never give up hope. And this is Marshall, and I'll catch you on the backside. La, da, 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 da.